Hello and welcome to Vikings Territory Breakdown. It's deja vu all over again for myself, Joe Oberle from VikingsTerritory.com and PurpleBTSD.com, and Mark Craig from the Star Tribune and the StarTribune.com. The Vikings lost another one, three in a row to start the season, puts them at 0-2 at home, 0-3 altogether, two games back in the division, and a huge hole to climb out of. You know, I mean, the close game victories from last year, there's 11, have turned into the close game losses. There's counting the playoffs last year, there's now four in a row of one score games that the Vikings have kicked away. The luck, the fortune they had last year has turned into bad luck when you see Caleb Evans, you know, not make that interception, and you see the ball being stripped out of the Vikings players' hands. So their luck is not as it has been in the past. It's a tough pill to swallow. Another winnable game, another one at home that they should have won, could have won, but they didn't. Mark, what did you think?
Well, I mean, whoever says that these, that the football gods even these things out, I don't know if they mean that you go 11 in a row and then now, you know, what apparently looks like it's going to be 11 in a row. They're four in a row, you know, going the wrong way, including the playoff game. You know, my thought was, great start to the game. You know, they're actually running the ball. I would like to see Jefferson sprinkled in a little earlier, but right. Then, you know, they just, you know, the safety swoops in, just takes the ball right away from TJ Hockenson. And that set the tone for the whole game. And that just, When you get going south like this, it just feels like it just snowballs and it won't end. And it goes week to week to week. And it kind of becomes who you are. And I don't know how they're going to get out of this, but they got to get out of it. You know, it was 2-1, and they still lost the turnover ratio. It wasn't the 3 in the first half like before. But that first one set the tone, because then, you know, the Chargers get the ball, go down the field, right down the field in 12 plays, 80 yards. Yep. And score, and it's
do them in the worst places, don't they? They have these turnovers, you know, down in the red zone and down in the other area, and they take what's something very positive and turn it into something very negative.
Yeah, and that's it's sort of the feeling like even though Madison was running hard and everything, I'm sure everybody that was watching, they're holding their breath because they're expecting the ball to come out. And you know, and the Vikings actually got, I feel, and the Chargers felt, they got a gift on that one that should have been a fumble, that they made a real quick call that he was down. Madison was down at the goal line there. That could have been another one. That caught, yeah. cost the Chargers 3 points, but, you know, that should have been another turnover. And so there
could have been
all the gizmos that the KOC says they went out and bought on the internet to improve ball security. They better get Ziggy's credit card and go get some more, I guess. One of the stranger games you'll see.
Yeah.
Could have been won a million times. And like you said, Caleb Evans, you know, not only does the ball go off his hands, and then it kind of ricochets where it might go away from the receiver, hits him in the helmet, and goes into the guy's hand.
Yes.
So, everything that happened last year is a complete opposite. Just like I, got Zim fired was happening 2 years ago. It's a very similar feel.
Yeah, even the final fumble was a bobble that guy made a nice play on it. Don't get me wrong with Hockenson. It wasn't a fumble. He didn't make the catch, but the ball stays in the air enough for them to pick it off and end the game. Sounds like certainly turnovers had another factor in this game, but I think for me, it was the last two drives. And then the one that should have been a drive in the first half down in the red zone that turned into just a field goal, that was the difference for me. And I lay a little of that blame on everybody for those two drives. I mean, there was some bad play calling on the first one, bad protection because Madison was coming open and could have scored a touchdown easily had Bosa not gone in and smacked Kirk's arm. And then there's the one that everybody's talking about, why don't you clock the ball? So – Mark, what do you think of first go with the first drive. I mean, I thought the play calling down there was pretty poor. They just not very creative with as much firepower as they have down there, and a couple runs to Madison that didn't go anywhere. The pass play to him across the middle was a great play design, but then the execution is wrong because you can't keep Bosa out of there, and your offensive line can't protect your quarterback. But
so the one in the first half you're talking about, where Brian O'Neill has Bosa to tangle with.
Yeah,
there was a sack one, a 45 got around him. I think Kirk should have got rid of later in the game. I think Kirk should have got rid of the ball, but yeah, I mean Bosa, that's a touchdown. It's a walk-in touchdown there. The Vikings seem very determined and to be a running team and to come out and be that way. And so, but when they got to the goal line, I'm thinking, you know, they do need to kind of divert, you know, do some different things. But you know, to me, it's if you execute there, if you don't, that should be a pretty quick, you know, turnaround there. Keep Bosa just at bay and do that. But if you look at the play, you know, I think they got outplayed a little bit, but they also got outcoached. I think we'll talk about the defense later, and how they countered, Flores.
Right.
Offensively, you know, we'll talk about the clocking of the ball, but you know, for a team that last year, even wrote stories about it, and it was a weekly thing of the situational masters and the situation. Situational masters. I mean, you talk about a name, giving a name to yourself of what you do for these situations. I mean, that's a little lofty, and they earned it last year. They lived up to it, but now it's almost a punchline. So, if you have situational masters, have your 13 year quarterback, you know, spike the ball when he's got first and goal at the 7. They can talk about there being noise. It was loud. We couldn't communicate. Are you kidding me? It's like you got a quarterback who's a veteran quarterback who's played a million games and he's there every week. And how he doesn't go up on the line and spike the ball and waste 30 seconds and rush the last play of the game.
He should have been waving his hands, waving them up, spike, spike, spike. I mean, that's what everybody's – I wasn't thinking, but I was watching the clock going, what are you doing? What are you doing?
I don't know what he was doing, and
he didn't seem too happy in his press conference after old Kirk Cousins. Either he was mad at not being able to have that autonomy, because he ended up calling a play and going up there rather than spiking the ball. And I mean, they lost 22 seconds, I believe. That's unthinkable. I mean, in 29 seconds, that it's got to come to your mind. I got to spike this ball. You know, I mean, does he think that, oh God, we need four plays to get this into the end zone from the 2 yard line because we didn't do it earlier? I don't know what he's thinking.
Well, the explanation didn't fit. You know, maybe we'll find out more, but I just, you know, if he doesn't have the ability to spike it, then what are they practicing for? I don't get it. I think it was just him trying to get a particular play set and ready to go. And then they're down to one play. They could have ran three plays there.
Yes. You have to know. You have no timeouts. You had over half a minute there and plenty of time. You know, it just spiked the ball. And, you know, but the thing is, what did KOC said? He ran through a whole gamut of things that came in communication. Can't hear, blame the crowd. I suspect he's going to address that one at noon today because he's probably heard he doesn't want to get the crowd or the fans mad at him, blame them.
Blame the fans
for a lot. But, you know, all these things could have happened, but, you know, it should have been one of those fire drills where everybody's screaming, you know, get up to the line and clock it. And then you have the ability to think rather than panic. That frenetic play, I heard Kirk say that he called the play that KOC would have called, the thing to Hawkinson. They're trying to get Jefferson in the corner of the end zone. He was covered. So he went to TJ underneath. And he said, Kirk says, I put it away from his body where nobody else could get it. Well, it was a little too far and he didn't make the catch and he bobbled it and came up in the air. And all of a sudden the game's over. It's God, it, it, you know, as when you think back to Kirk in the quarterback Netflix thing, he's always kind of frenetic. That contributes to it too. There's no 12-year experience that says, okay, I know exactly what to do here. Clock this ball, boom, 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 boom. He's up there panicking just like everybody else in the way it looked.
You know, this year is a lot of, you know, it's given fuel for mostly for the, well, for both sides. It's the, you know, people that will say, and you know, Kirk is both. He's what you just described, but he's also the guy who throws for 367 yards and 3 touchdowns. You know, there's this, that's kind of what he is. And he's more good than bad, but in moments like that, I don't know. I don't understand how when they come out with the explanations, it's like you something that you hear when a guy is Justin Fields or someone in his second, third year.
Ooh, ouch.
This is the second year with O'Connell. That was supposed to be the big selling point for this year. And the explanation doesn't fit. And then you look at the difference between when Justin Herbert got 4th-and-1 when they went for it at the end of the first half.
You're kidding.
That's the hardest thrown 1-yard touchdown pass. How that guy caught that is
yeah.
It's like a jugs machine that's set to like infinity, and this guy catches it, and you know he puts it right on him. Now, Kirk, you could say Kirk maybe should have done the same thing. Well, if he does that, it takes a little bit of blocking out of the defender for TJ.
Yeah.
He had to throw it. He did have to throw it a little away from his body, which caused the deflection and everything. But he, Parham, the guy who caught the 1-yarder, he's catching that with his hands like that. And that's, yep. You could say TJ should have caught it. But the whole thing is just, it's too rushed. It's too, you know, you talk about those last two drives when they had 1st-and-goal at the 3, 1st-and-goal at the 6. They ran 5 plays. They got 1 yard, turned the ball over on downs, and threw an interception. I mean,
yeah,
come on.
You can't win ball games like that. Now that's there's plenty on the offense to digest there and to lay blame. I can't lay it all on them because you brought up Justin Herbert, who threw for 405 yards, and Keenan Allen tacks on 40 more in the passing game. I guess if I can take your text to me last night at face value, Brian Flores shouldn't be polishing up his resume just yet. Maybe he needs to hold
on. I'm just teasing you, Joe.
I know you are, but it's not untrue.
When we were trying to like figure out what are we going to talk about, and it's the dark days of February or what, or when they just got hired, and the narrative was, oh my God, we're going to lose him after a year. We're going to win the Super Bowl. We're going to lose Brian Flores. And so,
I said back to you is that's good because then maybe they get him some players, you know. Well,
Brian Flores can coach.
Because last week they got run over. This week they got passed over. Oh my goodness. The cornerback play was, you know, how is Keenan Allen so wide open all the time? 18 catches for 215 yards, his best game as a pro, the worst, most catches ever given up by a Vikings defense in their history. And Mike Williams goes out hurt. What the? And Austin Eckler's not even there. My goodness.
It's tied for the 3rd most catches in NFL history. There's only 2 guys that have caught more. Brandon Marshall caught 21.
Why do the Vikings always do this?
The T.O. caught 20. So, and frankly, the man could have caught 30 balls because he was open. There were other times where, you know, Herbert is looking somewhere else. You know, it's going back to Flores. You know, Flores is a good coach. I think he's established. We can all say he's a good coach. But the in-game adjustments, the last 2 games, whenever we're sitting there going, "What are you doing? Why are you sitting there with just 1 tackle and 1?" You know, as the Eagles are just the Eagles were confused and they were baffled and they were getting booed and they decided we're going to run the ball right at them. And there was no adjustment made, and that changed the game. In this case, I saw a stat where, and I knew they were going after him, but they went after him. They showed pressure on like 40 of 49 dropbacks, something like that. And it became, you know, it did not confuse Herbert. The Vikings didn't get to him enough. Mm-mm. Danielle Hunter finally got to him and knocked the ball out of his hands. I think they only hit him 5 times. So.
Right.
You're talking about the percentage of affecting him was so low, And all they were doing was, you know, Keenan Allen and Herbert are on the same page. And that's what I wrote about for, you know, my main story that I did today was just, you know, how are they doing this? When it was just, you know, Herbert, Allen and Herbert knew, like, to me, there was more loose coverage and like confusion and like, what do we do with him? But with like either having a safety over the, you know, like a safety, you know, too far back, or one case where Ivan Pace is supposed to kind of carry him a little bit. It didn't work, you know, and it ends up, he had one 25-yard catch where, you know, fourth or fifth safety on the team is like the nearest guy and clue to him. But even whenever he was in tight coverage with Murphy, it was, you know, he, with the pressure coming at him, it was like he had to get it out quick. And Keenan Allen knew which way to go, and Herbert knew exactly where he was going. He threw it before he made his cut, and boom, boom, boom. And it was pitch and catch, and because he was getting open, and it's a great receiver. And how they didn't have a better plan for him, I know they have Williams on the other side, and they got other guys, tight ends, but they didn't give anything like special to him that I felt that they should have. And you know, when that pressure's not going to get there, and let's face it, Davenport's only played four laughable snaps in three games.
Does he want to play, Mark? Does he want to play football for the Minnesota Vikings?
I can't speak for him, but I'm just saying that when you talk to him, I don't get a sense of urgency. But you know, you can have feelings about, you know, gut instinct on how a guy reacts to questions, but you know, the idea was to kind of get there with him on the other side. And right now, I don't think there's anybody on that team that rushing that can beat anyone other than Daniil. And that's not enough. Whenever you're going to be sending all those people, it's going to leave giant holes like that. And so, you know, I don't see the adjustments there. And, you know, they're going to Carolina, and this is, you know, talk about bad Vikings luck. You know, Carolina's without their starting quarterback, but that's actually, if I'm the Vikings, I would rather play Bryce Young than I would Andy Dalton, who's had 163 career starts. But I can't see them rushing back because they said it could be a 1 or 2 week injury for Young. You know, I'd rather face Young than I would.
Hey, he looked good last night throwing the ball to Adam Thielen, didn't he?
Yeah, I watched it back. I got through like the first three. I got the 3.5 quarters, and you know, we'll get to that. How we'll pick, but there was a rhythm there. But you know, they had 8 false starts in that game because of the crowd in Seattle. And wow. I don't think offense. You know, if Dalton plays, the offense is good enough to beat the Vikings. I don't know if their defense, if there's enough left to beat the Vikings.
How about the Vikings offensive line, which, you know, we have grabbed about for forever. And I, once again, I don't think they gave Kirk a lot of time. They opened the hole for the running game, and the Vikings did have a balanced attack going so much. So you said earlier, you would have liked to seen some Justin Jefferson sprinkled in. So would my brother, who has him on his fantasy team. You know, to balance it off with him a little bit early, but they had a good game plan that was working well for him. But then everything went to heck. And you know, this team's always going to have to pass protect, because we're always going to be in close games that have to race back down the field and catch up. So the offensive line, Dalton Reisner did not play yet. I suspect we'll see him this week because they need something. Ingram had another bad game. Seems like he gets trucked every passing down that he's got to protect. What'd you see from the offensive line yesterday?
Well, yeah, I mean, I saw they came out and they ran. They were determined to run the ball. I kind of, after about the fourth play, I think it was 4 or 5 that they opened with Madison. I said, is this Earl Campbell we're watching here or whatever? But, you know, Justin Jefferson should never go 20 minutes of game clock without touching the ball. I mean, come on. Madison's getting some good games and everything, but you got to get Jefferson.
Use him as a decoy now because it's cheaper when they get the new contract than you can.
Well, I said whenever the first quarter ended, he hadn't touched the ball, and then we get into the second quarter, I said, are they going to ask him for a pay cut? If they remembered he, and sometimes, you know, it's not calling things for him. And other times, I think Kirk has still got that, you know, he's not going to force it to Jefferson as much.
Right.
I'm not saying you should force it all the time, but you know, this is the best receiver in the league. Get the ball to him. You're the quarterback. You got them. One of the most accurate arms there is. You can make any throw. Do it. You know, do it.
But what, you know, ultimately, I think, yes, I agree with that. But I think it, more importantly, is for Cousins to get the other guys involved. Then if they're covering Jefferson so bad that he's not a good choice for him, make him pay by doubling Jefferson with somebody else. And the weapons are there. Addison is good. Hockenson is good. You know, so I mean, you have to do that too. You can't just.
I'm sure you do, but the thing is that you can't ignore him. Can't ignore him for 20 minutes.
No, you're right. I agree.
You cannot have him go 20 minutes without a target.
I agree.
Him when you're down 21-10, and he's got four catches. Granted, two of them were long catches, but he's got four catches. Yeah, and the other receiver's got 14 targets, and he's already. Set the NFL record for most 11 catches. Some of the Seahawks tweeted out in the third quarter, you know, that Keenan Allen now set the record of 14, 11 catch games in his career.
Wow.
Someone should have told the Vikings because they weren't showing any special attention to him.
Question about that, Mark. You know, I didn't even really hear Byron Murphy's name the first two weeks, but I sure heard it yesterday and saw him play. And he had a tough game back there. Is the cornerback play that we saw yesterday, is that a result? Is that a product of the poor pass rush? You know, they're connected, or is it just that there's not the horses back there to do?
Well, it's a product of them not being comfortable with the defense. It's a product of them all being really young. Even Murphy's a young player. Murphy, it wasn't like Murphy was shadowing him and
right
playing a lot of tight coverage. You know, the one. I think it was before the half when they it was a deep kind of an out pattern where Blackman was a rookie who's kind of off of him. And he's sort of like taking Keenan Allen and passing him on. But when he passes him on, Murphy is playing like a three deep, and he's not in position. And he kind of goes to the middle for the other guy like he's playing safety. And then they just throw it in the little pocket there deep, and there's a giant hole right there.
Yeah.
That can't be how it's designed.
So I didn't understand that either. Yeah,
I don't understand. You know, I don't think that they understand. And Blackman is a guy that's playing. He's kind of his coverage is loose, and we've seen that in earlier games. And some of it is the fact that they are pressuring. There's a lot of pressure going, and so there's a lot of guys going this way, and the ball's coming out this way. We were joking because the narrative for 18 games last year was, you know, we got to get rid of this shell coverage. We got to pressure. We got to rush the quarterback. Now it's like we can't be rushing the quarterback. We got to play back. We got to get some soft shell coverage to kind of keep. Keep them in front of us. And, you know,
maybe hire Ed as an assistant.
Maybe it's some sort of combination of and getting better players and more.
Well, and it is some, you know, making adjustments. You said that earlier. I think Caleb Evans is going to be okay. He seemed even in position. He was in position to make that play that he didn't make that turned into a lucky touchdown for the Chargers. But and generally he. I mean, he had him like mistakes. He's a young guy. It's his second year, but I think he's going to be all right, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, you can't, I mean, he should have made the catch. He should have made it, but that's, he's in a position to make a play, and he, you know, can't beat him up too bad for that because just, that's just football. But
right.
Of all the guys I see out there, I have probably the highest hope for him. I would say if you're looking down the road, if you're deciding to tank for anyone in particular, and you need more players, when Danielle Hunter ends up with about 17 sacks, he won't be affordable coming back if you're going to pay Justin Jefferson and all this. So, he'll be making some money somewhere.
Oh, my. Well, on that sobering note, I need a break. I tried like heck to find some good stuff that happened yesterday. I mean, that was bad, and there's plenty more to talk about there. But we're going to come back and try to look at the bright side and keep the sun shining on this murky, rainy, cloudy day for the purple. So come on back to Vikings Territory Breakdown. Okay, folks, welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown podcast with Mark Craig from the Star Tribune. Mark, we're looking for good things to happen, and you mentioned in the first segment that KOC might have got out coached, but at least on one play he didn't. The Vikings had a fourth down stop deep in the Chargers territory because they went for it on fourth and one, and the Vikings had no, all they had to do is punt the ball and make him go 70 yards, and instead they went for it on fourth down. The Vikings made a huge stop, and everybody was scratching their head about that one. That just added to the bizarreness of this game. I mean, afterwards, Howie Long and Jimmy Johnson were going, "What are you doing? Punt the ball! Punt the ball! Make him go 70 yards!" I mean, what is that? Is that a product of analytics where you say, "Okay, it's so easy for someone to go up and down the field and throw them towards the sidelines, and they can get up down?" I mean, what, Mark?
Well, yeah, and that's my extra points in the paper I led with that because, you know, there's so many times that you're sitting there and you're talking to guys. And granted, you're asking questions to guys that, you know, have forgotten more football than we'll know. And they've done it and they know what they – but their explanation sometimes, I don't know if they believe it or they're just talking down to us or whatever. But it was like, you know, why'd you do that? Okay. And the explanation was – other than, you know, I have faith in my team, blah, 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 and all that stuff. The explanation was they were out of timeouts, and it's a four-point game, so we're not defending the field. Well, duh, we get it that you wouldn't have done it if you were up by two, where they would just, you know, sit on the ball and kick a field goal. Right. We understand. We're smart enough to figure that one out. But he said, he goes, they were out of timeouts, and I have trust in my defense. And immediately, and I'm sure a couple of us said something afterwards, but you don't say it because you're like, you know, you just kind of sit there and you ruminate on what he said. But, it, you know, obviously they're out of timeouts. You get even a bad punt, which that guy wasn't punting very well, but even a 40-yard punt, you know, forces them to go over 70 yards for a score with a minute 47 as opposed to 24. Now, granted, you're expecting to get the first down, but you have to allow for, you know, you trip, you bobble the ball, whatever. Or in this case, Bullard makes a great stop. You know, he splits right between the tight end and the right tackle, makes that great stop. And I think Chargers had only run the ball like 12, 13 times at that point. So they weren't exactly going up and down the field running the ball. They were passing the ball. So to me, that made no sense. It was like, if that's the case, if you trust your defense and they got no timeouts, you make them go 70 yards, not 24.
And they deserve to lose their ad mat after that decision, just as much as the Vikings did after not clocking it. They deserve to lose that game.
Well, they handed the Vikings. I mean, they tried to hand it.
Yes.
They had 12 penalties, 94 yards. The cornerback, Davis, had three penalties. Two of them were on third down that gave them the Vikings a new set of downs. I think there was four or five penalties on third down that gave them a new life. I didn't think the unnecessary roughness on James in the goal line on Madison was – I think he was leading with his shoulder. I think he just hit him really hard. And in today's NFL, if someone gets hit really hard, the instinct is to throw a flag. And I don't think it was helmet to helmet. I don't think it was unnecessary. I think it was necessary roughness when you have a guy like Madison charging and who won't go down unless you hit him hard. So there were, you know, a lot of cases where they did kind of, hey, you know, it's yours, man. You're at home. Here you go. And the Vikings just could not capitalize.
Oh, God, it's unbelievable. You know, like you mentioned Bullard. That was a nice play. Big play in the game, but they couldn't take advantage of it. Kirk Cousins actually had a good game statistically, but it doesn't matter. He was 32 of 50 for 367 yards with three TDs and one pick that you really can't blame on him. That was the final play of the game. he had a little time again. He did miss some players, but the offense was 4 of 14 on third down, and that's got to be on Kirk not getting it done in those crucial situations.
Well, let's backtrack a little bit. I got to give him some blame for the fact that he let 30 seconds come off the clock and they rushed a play that.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so to me, that's I want to say that the throw should have been more in the center because the thinking there is you always hit, you throw it right on the player, right on the player. And if you can't hit him right in between the numbers, you look somewhere else. Well, they didn't have time to look somewhere else or do anything else because he let it get down to where that was do or die. And they got two extra timeouts.
Yeah.
One because of the penalty and then Jefferson getting hurt. The other one because Hockenson, you could say Hockenson was laying down to give them extra time, but until one of us takes that hit in the NFL and has to get your head back together, I don't think he was doing that. So by nature of how that game ended, they got two extra timeouts. You know, they had to pay 5 yards for the one because Hockenson got hurt, but still they got extra time just by chance. And still couldn't get in and score.
Any good news I have here is tempered by bad. Like, watch this. Alexander Mattison ran really hard. He ran really well. He had 98 yards rushing. And he looked like someone who's got Cam Akers suddenly looking over his shoulder. But he fumbled. And he had a fumble that they called back. And didn't he have a second one or not?
No, he Hockenson's the only one who fumbled in this one. But, the referees spared him, Mattison, of a fumble, I think. And,
yeah,
watching it back on a replay, I think the rules official guys might have said, because I watched the condensed version, so you can't hear their whole comment. But he agreed with the call, and I don't agree with it. Well, I think you agree with it because that's the call that was made on the field. They couldn't reverse
it. There wasn't enough to change it.
Yeah. I didn't even, the NFL, it seems to make it up as they go along. I don't, I didn't realize that was is reviewable because generally they'll say the whistle, there's a whistle or they stop.
Right, right.
Well, didn't they stop the play? there's no other explanation other than his forward progress. Now, we've all seen Mattison run, and his forward progress was not stopped. And had he broken free and spun around and gone in and scored, that they wouldn't have said his forward progress was stopped. And right. So that was a fumble, and I don't care.
You could have said the same thing about the Hockenson fumble. He was stopped and held up for a fraction of a second. His forward progress was stopped, and they pulled up. So, I mean, you could go either way. It's such a vague thing and hard. I'm not saying they should have. No. I'm saying you could have made the same argument based on what we saw in the Mattison one.
Yeah, I suppose so. And they, the Hockenson, they just reached in and grabbed it. And I talked to that guy afterwards. And he's like, I just stole his money there. And he goes, and every team works on this. So, but he's like, there's no surprise that if I didn't get it, someone else was going to get it.
Cam Dantzler did it against the Lions last
year. Yeah. So, yeah. So, but it's certainly, I think, fuel. It's like it is blood in the water. Whenever when you've fumbled the ball now eight times, or see,
Seven in the first two games.
No, but I mean fumbles. I'm talking about fumbles.
Oh.
I think they fumbled seven times. Yes, they fumbled seven times. And then they fumbled. They've lost seven fumbles now, I believe.
Wow.
And they lost eight the entire year last year.
So, hey, we're leading in something,
Yes, they were leading in giveaways. And the Raiders did tie them in turnover differential, though, last night.
Nice. Thank you, Las Vegas Raiders. Justin Jefferson, it took a little while, but he got on the board for a touchdown, and he had seven catches for 149 yards on 13 targets. That's that target percentage is not great, but this dude is good. There's no two ways about it. Get him the ball, like you said earlier. But
get him the ball in tighter. He shouldn't have to be. He should not have to be wide open or or even close to wide open for this guy to be getting. When you have a quarterback that can throw it on spot, typically as accuracy as good as Kirk's, Justin Jefferson should be getting a lot. I mean, even though he's had, you know, three real good statistical games, you got to get him the ball more. And especially like I said earlier, you can't go 20 minutes without him seeing the ball.
Yeah, and the Vikings season even further almost flashed in front of our eyes when he laid on the field with a cramp there late in the game. You know, everybody thought, oh, God, here it is. Time to collapse for the rest of the season for Caleb. But
his agent probably was a breathing heavy too, I would think.
Yeah, I suppose. Jordan Addison looks like he's going to be very good. But I'm just getting tired of this. You know, we got Jordan Addison. I even heard the idea he'll be able to step into the Jordan or Justin Jefferson role so we can trade JJ and completely rebuild. I just don't see any sense to that, Mark. Tell me I'm wrong, please. Or not.
You're reading the wrong sites or whatever. You know, is this Twitter or X or whatever?
Yes, of course.
You're going to get all that. I mean, obviously, it's, to me, a lot of what he's done so far is because, I mean, his touchdowns, I don't know if he's got two touchdowns. You know, one of them off the top of my head, there were two guys that went this way with Jefferson, and he went that way by himself and, you know, caught a 39-yard touchdown. So,
happening every game.
You want and you need two receivers. Thielen, I would rather have Thielen and give him a little bit more money and have three of those three guys and maybe KJ as a fourth guy than to be given Thielen, have Thielen count $13 million in dead money on my cap. So they went out and at that, to me, is one of the only good things going right now for Kwesi is that they drafted this guy and this guy's the real deal. And he's going to, he and Jefferson, if they can get Jefferson signed, are going to have, a pretty good future as long as they can put a quarterback with them long term.
I was listening to KFan this weekend and Friday Football Feats with PA Paul Allen and Charchian. I can't even think of his name, first name, Paul Charchian. And he gave 10 reasons why you shouldn't get rid of Kwesi yet. I'm not saying you're saying that, but one of the things he said was they got out from under Dalvin Cook and they got out from under Thielen at the right time. Now, we hadn't seen much from Thielen until last night. Thielen looked really good. He had, he had a touchdown. He had 100 and some yards and like 8 catches, I believe. So he was getting some separation last night in the game and the quarterback was able to hit him. I still think it's a good move ultimately, because if you don't get rid of him, then you don't get Addison, and then Thielen's probably done next year or the very year after. But Addison is going to be young and good going forward for a long time.
Right. Well, if it costs you drafting Addison, then no. You could say when they were sitting there, you could say, is it receiver? Is it corner? Their corners are not very good, and but they're young. So what do you have to work with? Booth not seeing the field whenever they're, through these games is not a good sign. Seeing not seeing the field.
Amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
I'm nowhere near saying that Kwesi should be fired. What I'm saying is that, let's start keeping score. He did this because it's analytics and that the analytics are great and all hail. No, it's you got to answer to it. And there's a lot of things right now that are going against how he drafts. And
you're exactly right, Mark.
If we're going to go down the trail of, we got out from underneath Rick's, all of his contracts. Blaming on the guy before you. Not saying that they're doing that, but
some of that's legit though.
Yeah. Okay. Well then you got to say, you have to owe them the fact that you won 13 games because personnel wise, that was Zim and Rick's team. The horseshoe went up last year and the injuries weren't as bad. And now the horseshoe's back down. So, yeah, if you're gonna give them, if you're gonna say, well, they took my 2023 season from me because I had to get out from underneath all their crap, then you better say thank you, thank you, thank you for my 2022 season.
You know, you bringing up Scene and Booth. I mean, there's no more. I don't know what the cliche is, but hanging that around Kwesi's neck. I mean, if this team more than any other, one or both of those guys should be making a contribution, and neither are. They're, I mean, the secondary back there is so young and so green and not performing well. This would be the opportunity for a young first and second round or third round pick to come in and play, but they're not even on the field. It's just
crazy. No, and you look at Detroit, they were kind of back to their personality yesterday by, I think they held Atlanta to 180 yards total offense. You know, wow. Their draft picks from this year are, really for everybody that made fun of their draft, just watch some of these guys play. The linebacker, oh, you took a middle linebacker. Oh, you're how 1980s of you. And, well, this guy can play. And their corner, I forget his name, but these guys are good draft picks. And so, yeah, you got to draft. You have to hit on the draft more than what has been hit on in the last two. Not saying it's
even the tight end go ahead.
It's not looking good for that 22 draft, but it's not over yet. It's obviously not over yet.
Even the tight end that they picked up after trading away Hockenson, he scored a touchdown.
Laporte. He had a fantastic game.
Yeah. Is anybody playing good on defense, Mark? I mean, Metella seems to make a lot of plays. Hicks had a good game yesterday for a while, and you certainly got Hunter, but is Murphy going to be okay? I mean, anybody you can point to that are a bright spot over there on the defensive side of the ball?
Number one's Daniil. I mean, Daniil's like he was, before the injury. And Daniil is, if Daniil would ever get some help on the other side, Daniil right now, he's got 5 or 6 sacks, a lot of pressures. The fact that they couldn't get to Herbert yesterday as much as they should have, with how much attention they did to trying to get to him, it was not Daniil Hunter's fault. The other guy that I think is playing very well is Cam Bynum. I see a lot of sure tackles. I see a lot of awareness where he gets to where he needs to be in a hurry, and he makes. I don't see any missed tackles. I would say those are the top two for me that guys on defense that are playing well.
Haven't heard Harrison Smith's name called much, other than the fact that he's not making the splashes like we thought he would in this defense. Is he really slowing down as we get into the end with him?
Well, I mean, he's probably not the player he was, 5 years ago, but you can't be at that level forever, or when he was all pro. They did send him quite a few times on Sunday, didn't get there, but that ball also was coming out.
Yeah, it was.
They went after, they rolled the dice on going after a quarterback who's got a rifle and a quick release and a veteran receiver.
And a brain. Yeah.
If they take that approach and it's a Bryce Young or something like that, if you can keep him from running, I guess, then it's a different story maybe. But that approach just didn't work against who they were playing.
Is that the wrong scheme then? Is that on Flores? Should they have, not shell, but they should have maybe done something different?
I'd say it's on Flores because there doesn't seem – so far there hasn't been an in-game adjustment. And I'm not saying I'm smart enough to know what that is, but I would think Brian Flores would know how to make an adjustment pretty quickly. And right. it's just like when you talk about like, hey, I'm not smart enough to know how it works when you got first and goal at the 7 and you got no timeouts. But I do know that your veteran quarterback who's 35 years old should know what to do and spike it. And They practice. They spend more time practicing than they do playing, and sometimes it doesn't look like it.
Well, it's like a black hole for prospective head coaches. Was it, who was the offensive coordinator from Philly that, that Zimmer picked up and he was going to be the next head coach, and all of a sudden he fell off after he, Zimmer fired him midseason. What was his name?
DeFilippo.
Yeah.
DeFilippo came in, you know, fresh off. He was quarterback's coach, I think, in Philly. And came in, you know, a little full of himself. And Zim wasn't I don't think that was Zim's hire. Well, it wasn't Zim's hire. And it's more presented to him. And he said, okay. But, you know, he came in and ignored Zim when it came to, like, you know, hey, we need you to run the ball. And it, well, and when they went to Seattle and those deep balls on third and short, and we were joking in the press box, but it turned out to be true. It's like, I don't think DeFilippo is even going to need to get on the plane to come home. You might as well just take it to his other house because he's done, you know, and sure enough, he was.
Oh, well, that's, yeah, I'm not ready to send Brian Flores pack.
No, certainly not.
I mean, I'm talking about me. I'm not, I know you're not. But on that note, I'm going to take a break, and we got the next game to preview. We've got some other NFL stuff to talk about. So come on back to Vikings Territory Breakdown. Welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown with Mark Craig from the Star Tribune. Mark, am I calling you Mike Craig? I'm calling.
It doesn't matter.
That I in your second name that screws me up. I don't know. Anyway, right after we got off the air last week, the Vikings made our podcast obsolete by signing Dalton Reisner. And then next day, was it the next day? You know, very soon after, maybe by Wednesday, they signed Cam Akers. So at that point, I guess you can say, at least I thought, well, hey, the Vikings are 0-2 and they're not giving up. They're still hanging in there. They're still trying to improve their team. And when I saw what it cost him, I said, hey, those are good moves. I mean, for Reisner, they signed him to a contract that's not fully guaranteed. So that's good. And for Cam Akers, Vikings swapped a sixth round pick and turned it into a seventh round pick, both picks in the 2026 draft, and got Cam Akers. So I, you know, after yesterday, maybe you don't need it in the running game, but maybe they think they do. They don't have enough depth there. I was a little surprised by the move, but like say, when given what they gave up for it, I think it's a no brainer. What do you think?
Well, yeah, they didn't bring him in to stand and watch. I mean, you know, Reisner, I'm sure his thumbs are in shape because he's all the tweeting he was doing.
But, yeah.
He's going to need at least a week to knock heads a little bit before he goes out there. But yeah, I mean, they're not going to pay him $4 million to not come in. So I would assume that, you know, he's going to play this week. You know, and they might have run the ball well, but Kirk's still getting smacked around, and that's a lot of that's on the interior. Akers is a guy that, yeah, I mean, I think based on what Wes Phillips answers to some questions on Thursday last week, ball security was a big deal, you know, why they brought Cam Akers in. And even though it wasn't officially a fumble on the goal line, I think what happened with Madison on the goal line is further proof that, you know, maybe, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, with a running back, it's like you're not going to see like Akers step in and Madison sit down and not.
Right.
I mean, it could be a combination of both. It couldn't hurt, you know, because, you know, Madison had some good runs and everything, but I'm not saying Akers is a Dalvin Cook or anything like that, but, you know, you're a good run is 10 yards. You know, I mean, if you just keep feeding them, you're going to get 10, 8, 7, 5, 3, minus, something like that. There's not that explosion there. So I don't think he's a guy. I don't think that he's a guy that, unless you're up by a bunch, you're going to be wanting to give 20 carries to every week. I don't see that as, you know, like we got to get the ball to, sort of like when Dalvin was in his prime, it was like Dalvin Cook needs to touch the ball 18, 20 times somewhere in there. I don't care how you do it, you know, because you can break one and score. Well, I don't get that sense that you need to keep feeding Madison until he scores, because he's not going to break off those 80 yards.
Right. Yeah. I, you know, it, it's Chandler did okay when he was in there, and I thought he was a nice change of pace. I was surprised they made the move, but like I said, it didn't cost him much, so why not? Maybe, you know, Akers had things had gone sour for him in L.A. KOC knew him from when he was a coach there, so maybe it's a good thing. So he knows the offense. He can step right in. We need help. I really want to see Reisner in there this week against the Panthers to see if there's any improvement there, and they can keep Kirk upright a little bit better, and they should be able to. NFC North Division, the Packers came back from 18 in the fourth quarter to win that game at home, their home opener, which, you know, which is good for them. The Lions win again. So the Vikings are trailing both in the North, and the Bears are who we thought they were. So there's no need to crown them at this point. Thoughts on the NFC North, and can the Vikings still turn things around and get back in there?
Well, it's funny when you talk about the NFC North. What happened in the fourth quarter in Green Bay? Okay, a guy making his first, you know, he's his first year as a starter, third career start as the guy, as the QB1. Granted, he sat and learned for 3 years, but Jordan Love has two touchdown drives. I think they're both 80-yarders in the fourth quarter to lead him back. You know, and Kirk has done this too, obviously. He set a record last year with comebacks. But meanwhile, in Minnesota, you know, you have your experienced quarterback not clocking the ball with 30 seconds coming off the clock. It just doesn't jive. It's like,
right.
You know, and then you look at what happened with Detroit. Detroit's at home, I believe, right?
Yeah. Yep.
At home, holding Atlanta to 180 yards total.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Granted, Atlanta offensively is not what the Chargers are offensively, but in Minnesota, you know, 183 yards was about three quarters of just what Keenan Allen got himself, you know, and he gets up to 215 yards. But then the 325 games came on and all was returned to normal when the Bears, I look up and the Bears were down, I think 35-0 or something like that. So the Bears are a complete mess, as big a mess as you're ever going to find. The Vikings are not a mess. The Vikings have the potential to still win a lot of games, but until they stop turning the ball over, none of the good stuff that they have or the good players that they have matter.
Right. Yeah. And you know, the schedule is going to be difficult with the Chiefs 2 weeks down the road here. And, you know, they better win at Carolina, and they better beat the Bears in this next three game stretch, or it's time to collapse for Caleb, as I heard some guy say on KFan yesterday. The Miami Dolphins put up 70 points on the Broncos, which, you know, as you and I probably share this, that's just fine if Sean Payton gets whipped that bad. No love lost here. Is that Miami that good, or Denver that bad, or both?
Miami is it's like a pinball offense right now. And Justin Jefferson, I asked him a question last Thursday, and I said, you know, based on what Tyreek Hill did to the Chargers in week one, I mean, the Chargers or the Dolphins just kept throwing him deep ball after deep ball and just keep pushing it down the field. You know, do you have any encouragement on that? And even he said yes, but he goes, Miami's offense is like the fastest offense going. And he's right. You look at, you know, literally fastest. I mean, you look at, like, now the big thing now is like, how fast was a guy going when he scored a touchdown? Well, Tyreek Hill's, like, you know, I didn't know how fast 22 miles an hour what used to be until I started watching Tyreek Hill, and then every week finding out that it was a 22 miles an hour run. All these really important stats.
And Waddle wasn't even playing.
Yeah. So, I mean, Waddle's amazingly fast. And Mostert, I think they had two running backs score four touchdowns apiece.
Unbelievable.
I haven't read what the reasons behind the fact they kept the foot on the because this is the first time. There's only been four teams that have reached 70 points.
Washington teams, over the Bears way back in the
night. That's the record, 73. Yeah, there's only been four of them. So, the record is 73-0. But the fact that it was, you know, brought up again, usually kind of people call off the dogs, you know, in today's NFL a little bit. Right. I think it has to go back to Sean Payton and him sitting there, you know, just pontificating before the season and saying this was one of the worst coaching jobs in the history of the NFL. Well, you know, we're starting to see that, yeah, hey, you might. I think Hackett started out 1-2. So if you call that the worst ever, you just gave up 70 points to go 0-3. So sit in that for a while.
Yeah, and I'll bet your bottom dollar that old Sean Payton is eyeing that number one overall pick too for Caleb Williams, because I'm sure he's probably done with Russell Wilson after he sees him for 1 year. He's, I don't think he'll get beat by 70 or let his team score 70 points every week. But if the Vikings want to, tank for that, they got a lot of competition both in the Bears and Denver for starters.
Well, yeah, there's four teams that are 0-3. You got the Bears. The Bears would be my choice right now. The Bears would be hard to out tank the Bears. The Bears are a mess. They're not even trying to tank.
There's a game next weekend between two of those 0-3 teams.
I know. It's who would want to talk about that one?
Not me. It's really weird. I mean, the Vikings were 13-4 last year, and they're in this grouping of 0-3 teams that it's dispiriting. But at the same time, you know they're not that bad, and you know they're never going to tank, and you know they're going to win some ball games, and then they're going to finish in the middle of the pack, not make the playoffs, and not get a decent draft pick. That's how the Vikings roll.
Well, right now there's 10. You look at the AFC, NFC. AFC is probably the better conference, I'd say. And but they have seven teams that are at least 2-1 or better. And the NFC has 10 that are at least 2-1 or better, and could have an 11th team that's 2-1 or better if the Rams win at Cincinnati tonight. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, the prediction of 10-7, you got to go 10-4 now. It's hard to see, but
yeah, I have 11 wins. That's I'm paying that bet to my cousin for sure. I told him I'm paying him for last year this weekend, and I said I should just bring the beer for next year too, because the Vikings are not going to win anyway. On to the Carolina game. Watched a bit of them late game yesterday. It was nice to see Thielen come to life. I expected that with Dalton playing quarterback for Bryce Young, and unfortunately I didn't play him on my fantasy team. I wish I had, but that fantasy team's still 3-0, so I'm all good. They don't have a particular running game that scares me a lot. Their defense is not that great. They're a team that's in a rebuild to a certain degree, and it's there and you can see it. But what do you see from the Panthers? And the Vikings got to go on the road, but do you see finally them getting off the schneid and winning a game this weekend?
Well, they brought in Miles Sanders, and I think you'd see a little bit more of the running game. But, Andy Dalton threw it 58 times. That was a career high for Andy Dalton.
The Red Rifle wasn't rusty. He had that arm crane. Yeah,
but the Vikings I guess if you want to talk about the good luck last year, the bad luck this year, you're going to be facing – I think you're going to be facing a backup quarterback, but that's a bad thing, I think. I'd much rather face Bryce Young, inexperienced coming off an ankle, than I would Andy Dalton, who threw it 58 times last week. Got into a rhythm in the second half.
Yeah.
But they just kept jumping off side. They had 8 false starts. Bunch of penalties. The offense, Thielen had 14 targets. I mean, the 58 passes went to 10 different receivers.
Okay. Wow.
And I forget how many completed, but 10 different guys caught a ball. Thielen had 14 targets, 11 catches, 145 yards, looked really good. Offensively, I think they could get in a rhythm at home, especially, and give the Vikings everything they have. But defensively, if you look at week one, they lose J.C. Horn to a hamstring, put him on injured reserve. That's a big blow. Week two, Shaq Thompson, captain, leader, breaks his leg. He's out for the year. And then this year they lose. By the time they got to the second half, and you saw it was a close game, I think up in midway through the third quarter, but the defense wore out because there was one point where only two guys were on the field who were starters in week one because of injuries and rotation or whatever. So they lost a couple more, another linebacker yesterday. They lost Xavier Woods. CJ Henderson, a corner, they lost. I don't know what the severity of these injuries. So, you know, as much as I feel like I should, because, you know, you get caught chasing wins and losses. I feel like I should pick, you know, until the Vikings prove that they are going to stop, you know, making all these mistakes and turning the ball over, I feel like I should now pick the Panthers. But I'm not going to pick the Panthers because I don't think defensively they're destroyed defensively, I think. And so it's going to be two desperate teams. They're going to be, you know, I would normally go with the home team, but I'm going to at the risk of looking stupid again, I'm going to pick the Vikings to win on the road. But I'll tell you this, no matter what happens, unless Patrick Mahomes gets hurt this weekend, I'm taking the Chiefs. I'm going off the Vikings after this. You probably will too.
Well, we're both 1-2, and we're going to be either 2-2 or 1-3 after this week. So I'm picking the Vikings. I mean, the Vikings do still have a pretty god darn good offense. And if you're saying that the defense of the Panthers is that beat up, they're going to score a lot of points. And they've played Dalton in the past, and they've had reasonably success against him. And I like the fact. I hope he does play, because they don't need any gifts. That doesn't do anything for them. Play a better competition and beat them. I don't want, the hobbled rookie to come in and then Vikings say, oh God, we beat the Panthers. Well, beat someone with success.
I thought they got a gift last. And the reason I picked the Vikings last week is that they wouldn't have Eckler, and Eckler wasn't in there. And all they did was just threw it 50 times.
Right.
But this would be the four. If Dalton starts, it'd be the fourth straight year where he started against the Vikings with a different team: Chicago, Dallas, New Orleans, and now it'd be Carolina.
He's the modern day Fitzpatrick.
Yeah. I mean, it's when he plays, he's no longer a starting caliber. Well, I guess there's some teams maybe that he could be a starter, but he's not that guy, but He sure is. It would be a nice backup to have if you had a young quarterback.
Boy, Thielen will probably be running wild too, or at least trying to. Anyway, I got one more really important question. You brought up the Chiefs, and you know, I watched the game last night, and all over my timeline, did all I see is pictures of Taylor Swift up in the booth. She's apparently dating Travis Kelce, sitting next to his mom in the booth, and she's a big fan. And Bill Belichick said, they asked him about it. He says, oh, I know Travis, you know, because they tried to get Travis Kelce in the end zone to catch a touchdown pass. Mahomes did, so that she could be happy because she was there. And he says, well, I know Travis Kelce's made a lot of big catches in his life, and this may be the biggest one.
Who was asking that? Andy Reid?
No, Belichick said it.
I got to get video of that.
Yeah, I know it. Me too. That's what was reported. I saw it in two different places.
No, that's good humor for Belichick. All
yes,
right.
It is. Where does that?
He won yesterday, so maybe
he's happy. He was happy. Anyway, that's Mark's going to brush up on his TMZ, get his TMC source going to make sure he can answer questions like this next time.
But, well, do we add that to the turnovers?
Oh my goodness! On that note, we got it. We got to go, Mark. Thanks. Thanks for you showing up and putting that wet blanket all over what little joy there is in Minneapolis Mudville. And thanks, folks, for tuning in each week. We sure appreciate it. Mike Woldham, thanks behind the scenes for producing. Thanks, Joe Johnson, for putting us here. We'll be back next week to talk about the Panthers game. So check us out then. And thanks. Until then, skull.
Skull.